Hello and welcome to another episode of the Halloween Podcast. I'm your host, Lyle Perez, and today I have a very special guest for you guys today. I have author Bui V. Ibarra with me today, and we're going to talk about some zombie stuff, we're going to talk about some horror stuff, about his writing, and all of that good stuff. So, Bui, how you doing?
Great. Lyle, how are you, man?
I'm doing fairly well. It's kind of hot today, but I'm managing.
Nice. It actually cooled off over here on this end, I guess, because of all the weather that's been coming through. Yeah, kind of cooled off over here.
Oh, yeah. Aren't you in Texas? Didn't you just have that that flood?
Or yeah, were you knowing you're... I'm in San Antonio, so I didn't get a lot of it. But, man, I we're still, kind of feeling bad for the folks on the coast, man. They got hit hard. It's, they're having to deal with a lot of stuff right now, man. So it's pretty rough. And, hell, we got that thing going on, another one coming through that might hit Florida, which is wild.
Yeah, I think it actually hit the coast today. That might date this show when we're recording.
Yeah, man, that's just rough times. It's so crazy what's going on. You're not in the fire, are you? Speaking of, I mean, we got weather on this end here in the east and center, and then there's there's fires there on the west, man.
Are you? I'm nowhere near fire.
Not burned, I guess.
No, we had a fire probably a week ago. I don't know, it might have been arson because there was like five fires going on by my house.
Oh man.
But the fire department came, took care of them pretty fast. But there's no huge fires going on as far as I know right now here where I am, but I think Oregon is getting some fires. More north is getting the fires.
Got it. Okay, yeah, man, it's kind of crazy times, man. I'm one of those tinfoil hatters, so I'm one of my first thoughts is weather manipulation. They're using HAARP or they're using weather manipulated technology to create these crises. But
chemtrails, man, chemtrails.
Yeah, the chemtrails. They sit down. I'm one of those kooks, man. They're not answering direct questions about chemtrails or all that stuff. So it's kind of weird. It's kind of crazy. But I would just hope that they wouldn't mess around like that with people's lives and stuff. But anyway, yeah enough of the kooky stuff.
Yeah, we're not here for kooky stuff. We're here for Halloween stuff.
Yeah,
we're here
for horror stuff.
Yeah, so...
Have you decided on your costume yet?
My wife wants to do Trolls, like the movie.
The animated
movie. I'm nice. Supposed to be the king. My wife is going to be the troll that wants to cook the... Or not the troll, the ogre that wants to cook the trolls.
Nice.
My son is going to be the king troll. My youngest daughter is going to be Poppy. And my oldest daughter, she's going to be the ogre that has the rainbow hair. I don't know who their names are, but we're going to go as a family and we're going to see how that works.
Very nice. Very nice, man. That's excellent, man. That's excellent. I played a troll in a play once. It was a weird... it's called Cinderella Waltz. It was like a farce based loosely on the Cinderella story, and it was hilarious. I used to grow my hair out back when I had hair back in my high school days and college days, and I would poof my hair. I would let my hair grow out, but it was not like flowing long locks or anything like that. It would poof. It would like poof up. So
Afro style.
During the summer, I happened to let my hair grow. That play came along when school started. I hadn't cut my hair. And they're like, Bui, you should keep your hair tall like that and just poof it out and, play the troll and use that hair. I was like, yeah, why not? So back when I had hair. But anyway, I've still got hair, but you know how things go when you get older.
Yeah, anyway. I think the last time I saw you was probably, 3 years ago at Texas Frightmare. You still had a full set of hair.
In the parking lot. I think I was on my way out. Or I'd seen you before. I was on my way out and I took a picture with you there, I think, on the way out.
Yeah.
Man, so.
Yeah. Good times.
But we've been working between there, and I think I want to give you a quick shout out. I appreciate the work you've helped for me in regards to getting my books edited and formatted, man. I really appreciate that work. It's really invaluable getting it out there. So.
Oh, no problem. It's my pleasure.
Awesome. So
cool. Yeah, so let's get into some of your stuff. But first, I think We first met online probably about 6 years ago. I don't know through how, I don't know where, but I think it might have been the time where I was reviewing zombie books. And I was
Tinder,
just...
you swiped right.
definitely did.
No, I think you were reviewing books or doing something like that.
Yeah, and I think I might have contacted you or you contacted me, something like that. Twitter, I mean, at that time, social media was getting really big. So,
Well, you put something out there, I think, that you were, like, editing books, and I think I needed a hand, you know, to help in that, and I think that's how we started the collaboration. It's gone since then, at Rainstorm Press
and all that good stuff.
Other names that you used.
Yeah, I don't really do that as much anymore. I moved on to other stuff, mostly because I work for myself now. I'm self-employed, so whatever, I gotta move to the stuff that gives me money and less to the stuff that doesn't.
There
and,
you go.
This podcast is more of a labor of love. I have to do something to kind of take my mind away from a lot of this stress of life. So that's why this podcast is here. And
you're good, man. That's why I write, man. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Escape from the reality.
I know, but...
And drink, but... a little discussion there.
Yeah, that was a good convention, though. I remember it vividly. We had I met Alan Gandy there. I was there with people from Permuted Press back when it was a good press company.
It was a good time.
I met Norman Reedus there.
The guy that played Reanimator was there, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was there. Who else was there? Jenny Spain was there.
Yeah.
I met her at the... in the bar. I thought she was hitting on me at the bar.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, you got those good times.
I think she had just come off of the Zombie Girl. Zombie Girl movie, I think.
Dead Girl.
Something like that. Dead Girl. Yeah. Very interesting flick. I think before one of the first movies to kind of address the social issue of not rape culture or whatever. I know that's kind of a big deal right now, but that movie, when you think about it, kind of started asking some of those questions of that whole particular social discussion that folks had a couple of years ago. It's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's a crazy movie, though.
Yeah, it was actually really good. So.
Yeah, isn't it just them, like, finding her in the basement somewhere, and they just have her way with her the entire movie?
yeah, and then one of the guys decides, like, he's gonna be the pimp for her or something, and it's just the other one guy's it's been a couple years since I've seen it, but, like, one guy decides that he's, you know, the one that's gonna control her or whatever, that, you know, and he makes the decisions for it. It was weird, man. But it was just gross and sleazy there at the end. I was like, oh my god, these guys. So, but then that one guy, you know, said this is wrong anyway.
Yeah,
I don't want to give too much away there for the folks that might not have seen it. Check it out. It's not a bad view. It's got commentary. You know, it's got that kind of commentary, along with, you know, the zombie horror. You know, another angle of the zombie horror, which everybody's going through these days. So
yeah, I know zombie stuff's getting way too big, in my opinion.
No, it's not. I guess it's not necessarily a bad thing. I guess, but it's just, I guess, because it's not all been done before. Well, I guess a lot's been done, that everybody's taken all these new different angles on it. And I guess, I don't know if I can speak for you, but I know I'm kind of a traditionalist. I like the, you know, the shambling, the slow zombies, and, you know, there's all sorts of, you know, crazy stuff that's going on with zombies these days. And, but again, just folks looking for a new angle to get a little piece of that market.
Yeah, I've always said the most interesting part of a zombie apocalypse is how it happens. Not necessarily what goes on, because there's only so many ways you can survive, but figuring out exactly how zombies came about, what people do, that's the type of stuff that's interesting for me. But everything else, it's all pretty much the same.
Yeah, because I remember you're right, because that was always the most intriguing part about, you know, the early zombie movies before, you know, like I call them like the first wave and the second wave, but I mean the old zombie movies, that was the most appealing part, is they always kept that ambiguous, and you always wanted to know, wow, how did it happen? What started it? What went on? And I think some of the stories, you know, a lot of the stories, you know, tend to address that, but again, like you were saying, they got all these, you know, new angles these days to try and tell something, a fresh story, no pun intended there when you're talking about the dead, but all these fresh stories for an old... old theme, old genre.
Yeah, I mean, when I wrote Existing Dead many years ago, I had that in mind, where I wanted to come up with something that nobody has done yet. And I think I did it, as far as I know, because I haven't seen or heard of anything else that comes close to what I wrote. So did you ever read it, Existing Dead?
Hadn't had a chance to. I think I got a little bit into it, but not too far. It's always tough because I know reading is a big part of the writing process.
Right.
And I've had to, you know, that's come up a lot that, you know, of course, write every day, but you also need to be reading to try and find that balance. And it's tough. It's tough when all you want to do is write, but you got to, you know, you got to crack open books of, you know, right, people from all over.
Of course.
To you know, see what's going on, see how they're writing, and take little pieces and use it. Because reading is, I believe it, you know, folks were bringing that up, and I was like, wow, I never thought of that.
Right.
Reading's a big part of writing better.
It definitely is. So how did you get started in writing?
I guess I've always had a creative streak. When I was little, I guess I would write what today would be called fan fiction in little five-subject spirals. I was writing about Indiana Jones and Doctor Who and the Ghostbusters, and like I was combining them, and you know, stories, and I'm guessing that's kind of what fan fiction is these days, where people write alternate stories or sequels or prequels to existing material or existing properties or whatever. But yeah, man, I would draw pictures at the bottom. It was two of my favorite things to do: write and then draw pictures at the bottom.
Nice.
You know, of Indiana Jones and Doctor Who and the scarves and the TARDIS and you know, I'd put them, and zombies too. Indiana Jones fought zombies in Revolt of the Dead. I think I had two, Revolt and Revenge of the Dead. And it was fun, of course, again, using all the influences from the movies and Indiana Jones in it, or, you know, so that's kind of where I started. And I guess the first book I finally got really wanting to write when, I guess you could call it, I found a website in the early days of the web that was putting up little short stories about zombie horror, and man, there were good stories in there. And one, it just so happened a couple of weeks or months or whatever from work, you know, I was kind of knocking the idea around of writing something. One of my colleagues at work many years ago had said, hey, did you know that so-and-so got their book published and they only worked on the book for 6 months? So if, and then said something dumb, you know, something silly like, well, and so that means if you only work for 6 months, you can still have your book published. And I'm going to give it a shot. And,
right.
Wrote it out, hammered out the original Down the Road. One of the, I like to call one of the books from that first wave of zombie horror that started coming up here.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in this modern era.
Right.
Down the Road. Sunk some money into it to get it published, but it kind of got everything moving from there. Travis Adkins, the author of Twilight of the Dead, helped me get a foot in the door with the early Permuted Press, the very first Permuted Press, and you know, here we are. I've written, heck, I don't even know how many books at this point.
Like 30?
10, 11, 12. and yeah, just made it happen, man. It was great.
Good. So why did you decide to go with zombies?
Well, just such a powerful, I mean, Night of the Living Dead, George Romero, rest in peace, by the way, George.
Mm-hmm.
Night of the Living Dead was such a powerful movie, and just moved me. It was just amazing. And just for years, just stuck with me. And of course, the Holy Romero trilogy of Night, Dawn, and Day, you know, just powerful films. And it was really the first one I kind of wanted to write about. And it really stuck out to me most. So I got this idea for a story and, started writing the very first time, before I even did an outline, before all the kind of formalities I would put into it. I just started writing.
Right.
Just, you know, saw where it would take me and put together a story, man. That's kind of where, why I chose zombies. I guess it was the most, it was the thing I was most interested at the time. So,
nice.
And I guess that and cage fighting, I think that was my next story I wrote. I wrote the Pit Fighters. You know,
yeah, I remember that one.
Combined, you know, some of my two favorite things right there. So those were the first ones I started writing about.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why. They were some of my favorite things at the time. So
are your zombies more the traditional ones, or did you go with the fast ones or the ones that can't be killed?
No, absolutely no. They're the shamblers, the Romero style, you know, the slow walkers and stuff like that. Although they'd definitely be the Romero style, the slow ones. So, although there's a place for the other ones, you know, I'm not necessarily going to, you know, poo-poo the other ones, but right. You know, there's a place for all the zombies, man.
Mm-hmm.
They're good. So there's a good story for it. Oh yeah, man.
Yeah. So, what do you think of all the zombie media going on right now with like The Walking Dead, or with Z Nation, all that type of stuff?
I think it's good for everybody who's in the zombie genre. It's I enjoy Walking Dead. I think again, it's not bad for all of us, because if folks are still interested in it and there's still, you know, people that are interested in it, then they will hopefully end up finding some of our works. So I think that's why I don't have any problem with all these different zombie, you know, TV shows, movies, books, action figures or whatever, because it draws interest towards, you know, the genre and the style. So mm-hmm. It would hopefully eventually, you know, maybe have folks gravitate towards some of my works. And it's so funny, all of my books seem to have some sort of zombie angle. I always I've been having a bunch of book signings here in Texas here recently. I've been hitting up just a half price books here in San Antonio and in Austin. But when I'm describing a story that's outside of the Down the Road series, I'm like, oh yeah, for example, here's Sword of the Angel, and this is one of my books. Sword of the Angel is about a Mexican luchador who takes on the mask of his dad, and so he takes on the tradition, the family tradition, the family business, and eventually gets a little disillusioned, decides he doesn't want to maybe not do Lucha Libre anymore, and then the zombies show up. And then I always find myself saying that in some of these stories, like, oh man, I can't believe, you know, the zombies have stuck me all this time. So
mm-hmm.
Not only the Down the Road books, but you know, Sword of the Angel, the previous one, The Texas Assassins, that came out earlier this year, hell, even the Weird Western I have, The Cruel Fate of Dr. Brewster McGill, kinda has it does have zombies in it.
Right.
What else? Tejano Star and The Vengeance of Chaplain Skull, zombies in Del Rio, Texas. I haven't been able to shake the zombies.
No, you can't. I mean, but once the zombies get in you, that's it. That's all you want to do.
Yeah, heck, it got me to the dance anyway, man. So I don't mind being known as, you know, a zombie writer, but I just write what I write too. So
right.
Anyway,
cool. Well, let's get more into the writing process. So what's it like for you?
It's enjoyable. I mean, it takes some time, you know, because I got to get excited about the project before I write about it. So I might have a concept or a, you know, an idea, and I just let it marinate in my head, because I'm one of those, and I don't fault any writers for their process. It's writing, in my opinion, artistic process, not even an opinion, that's a fact. It's an artistic process. It's a expression, you know, somebody's expression of, you know, their artistic expression. So the way they go about making it doesn't matter. At the very end of, you know, it's the product that ends up, you know, being the important thing.
Mm.
But my process is finding the spark. I got to get excited about it before I can start writing about it. I know I prefer, although, you know, other authors like to just start writing and find the story. But I'm more of if I'm gonna drive to Dallas, I want a map, because I want to get there as fast as I can. So that's the reason I kind of need to be excited about the book, because it makes me want to finish the book and write to that finish. And in fact, I've always, you know, thrown around ideas, concepts, you know, things that might be cool. But if I don't envision that finish, and if the finish to the story, the crisis and the climax and the falling action don't excite me, then I, you know, I don't start writing yet. I just let the idea continue to marinate as long as it needs to. But the moment I see a cool ending, and I saw a cool ending with like my Down the Road, with Down the Road on the Last Day, with Down the Road, The Fall of Austin, with all the stories I've written, I got excited about the finish. Like, there's a specific point in towards the end of the story that I wanted to write to. And so that's it. At that point, once I see that, once I feel that, I put together an outline, you know, my map to get there, and I start writing. And then I start writing, because at that point, I'm excited. I want to keep writing to get to that finish. So that's what propels me. You know, the excitement, the moment of finally getting to that cool part of the story that I've envisioned, and oh, I'm finally writing this, it's so awesome, you know. So that's really what keeps me moving, you know, and gives me the direction. Because boy, I, you know, I I guess, you know, kudos to the authors that's going to write, you know.
Like me?
I need a direction. I need a direction. I've got to get there because, boy, I want to get there fast. Like, I see that ending. I want to get there fast.
Right.
By the way, the outline is very flexible because I might discover things in the writing.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have a direction. That's the main thing for me. I got to have a direction. I got to know where I'm going.
Right.
You know, through the writing process, I might add things with the pen to the outline. My outlines end up scribbled all over because I end up getting, you know, different ideas or things to add or things to go back. Oh, and by the way, I do it longhand.
Oh, really?
Again, it goes back. Yeah, it goes back to kind of when I first started with those spirals. I get a 5-subject spiral.
Mm-hmm.
I write on every panel like that. I write on the back of the very first page, and I write all the way through. You know, those dividers. I write on the dividers, and I just keep writing.
Yeah,
I just keep writing until the story's finished.
Yeah.
Since I'm indie, you know, underground, DIY, whatever you want to call it, I write till the story's done. I don't necessarily worry about word count necessarily. I just write till the story's completed,
right?
And I'm happy with it, you know. And I think that's I like having that freedom to, you know, write like that because it's, you know, my purest vision, I guess you could say. So when I get done with that first draft, I, of course, the second draft is on the computer, and that's where I start to transfer that information. And you know, in some parts of the book, I write notes to add stuff or to embellish something or to take something out. And the second draft is the transfer to the computer. And then the third draft, I print out the second draft, and I read it, you know, there on the page, and actually take like a red pen to it and start, you know, editing, making things clear.
Mm-hmm.
Note saying you need to add something else here, but this doesn't make sense. So I take that after I've scribbled all over the entire third draft, I transfer those notes, or I guess get the edits done on the computer, and then edit it on the computer for the fourth draft. I send that fourth draft to a buddy of mine, very detail oriented. He loves reading, and he's a detail guy, so he'll do some of the general edits, but also just for understanding, like, this doesn't make sense, or what's going on here, why is this character doing this, or didn't you say this character before was, you know, put his gun away and now, you know, the gun's out? Or, you know, he gets those little details and really helps me to fix it. So I take his manuscript and his notes that he scribbled on the manuscript I mailed to him, and I fix them again. And then I might print it out one more time or just read it out loud over the computer for the, you know, I try and do... somebody had once suggested once about reading it just for kind of the poetry and the ease of the language. Maybe not the ease of the language, but to kind of have a good steady rhythm, you know, so that way when the reader reads it, there's not a music. I don't know if that's too pretentious to say, but just a rhythm and a consistency to it, a poetry. I don't know how to describe it, but I read it out loud to hear it just to, you know, I guess, yeah. It sounds pretty pretentious, but the kind of the music of the language, and if it's easy,
right? No, you got to be able to hear it.
About cutting off heads and you know, exploding, you know.
Yeah, that's how you can tell if sentences are making sense, is if you can hear it. Because when we're reading, I mean, sometimes we don't notice the certain little things, but if it's said out loud, then you do notice it.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's my process. That's my process.
Yeah, I was the same way towards the end until. I found a dictation program where I just threw the manuscript in there and then the computer read it to me and I would listen to it.
Ooh.
So that might be something you need to look into.
Yeah, for sure. That's cool. Yeah, I might have to do that.
The nice lazy way.
Yeah, well, you know, you're still burning through it, so.
Yeah, so but. you said you wrote you write longhand, so where do you do most of your writing?
Whenever I can. I think that's the advantage with the longhand is that, you know, I can take it with me. If I know there's going to be up or down time, like at work or wherever, I've got it with me. So if I know I'm going to have 10, 15, 20 minutes to spare, well, let's break out that pencil, break out the manuscript, and let's write another couple paragraphs, you know, a couple pages. So that's the advantage to it. If I'm going to be sitting in a car or, you know.
In traffic.
I try to find all the free time I can to get it written, get it hammered out.
Nice. So who inspires you as a writer?
All the successful writers, all the folks that, yeah, I guess my readers, really, when I think about that, you know, I've got a small, very small group circle of, of readers that really enjoy my work, man. And I write for me, of course, but they appreciate my vision and my voice, I guess. So, you know, they really kind of keep me writing, man. I want to, you know.
You do it for the fans.
Yeah, well, I don't even call them fans. Let's call them readers. I think fans is a little too, you know, I don't know about that. Just my readers, man. I don't want to feel like I'm some kind of celebrity or some big shot. I'm a G level or like a G list writer over here, man.
So, no, you're on this podcast. You are an A lister today.
There you go. Today, I'll take it. I'll take it, man.
Perfect. Yeah. So, what are some of your favorite books?
I like one that sticks out to me is Alexandre Dumas' The Three Musketeers. Man, was an amazing book. Man, I thought it was going to be dry, hard to read, but man, the language was beautiful. The story was great. The themes were awesome of heroism and strength and courage and friendship, loyalty, and just, oh man, that whole book just, I was surprised how fast I read that because I thought it was going to be a bit of a chore, but mm-hmm. Oh man, that was excellent. That book was excellent.
It's long, very long.
Yeah, but I don't know, for me it flew by, man. For me it flew by. It was just so intriguing, and it just the way he, I guess, you know, story to story, scene to scene, just wanted to make you know, well, what's going to happen next? Well, what's going on? I mean, I thought that was just masterfully done, man. The Three Musketeers, I'm telling you, is one that definitely sticks out to me.
Yeah.
So, of course, Stephen King's books, The Shining, was one of the few books that I was reading that book one afternoon in the backyard of my house. It was high school. I'll never forget. I got scared sitting in a chair, broad daylight, by my own backyard at my house. I was reading that scene for the, what do you call it, the topiary or the like sculpture garden?
Mm-hmm.
I forget which character's the actor. I think it was I don't know if it was the main character or the kid, but they were in the sculpture garden, and those sculptures started moving. And, you know, they'd look one direction, they'd look back, and the tree sculptures were moving. And I got scared, like not wanting to look up from my book thinking something was there, scared, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that, I'll never forget that. So The Shining really was one of the first books. I was like, man, just an amazing book, man, an amazing book. The novelization of Friday the 13th Part 4 was pretty intriguing to me too.
Oh,
I remember
really?
That from my high school days when I used to do a lot of reading back in the day.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm trying to pick that up again now. But those are three that really kind of stick out to me of favorite books that aren't like you know, conspiracy or pro wrestling autobiographies or something. I'm looking back at I'm here in my little writing library, and I see, you know, a bunch of like esoteric stuff or fight stuff. I mean, I got a bunch of that.
Yeah.
But if we're talking books like that, that's definitely looking to see back there on my shelves. But yeah, some of those classics, man. Those three stick out to me. Those three really stick out to me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Your favorite books, yeah. You like wrestling, right? You're a wrestling fan?
Yeah, you could say that.
Still?
yeah, still. Exactly. I know some people like grow out of that, but...
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I did. In the
what
90s...
What was that?
I grew out of it, like, I don't know, in the early 2000s, but... every now and then I'll be on Facebook and then I'll see something you post and I'm like, man, he's still way into wrestling.
Yeah, I am a little bit. It's I mean, it's a spectacle. It's a,
yeah,
you know, farcical at the same time, but it just taps into that, you know, ritual aspect that humanity always seems to gravitate to. There's a, you know, the good versus evil, the stories mm-hmm. are up there. The archetypes are there, and you know, you kind of get, well, it's a novella, let's face it, it's a novella, but
yeah.
But that's really, I think, what still keeps people along, that ritual aspect, the infinite battle between good and evil, and mm-hmm. the folks that represent people that we like or people that we can live vicariously through and have a kind of catharsis when we watch them go through their trials and tribulations and achieve victory, or, you know, feel the defeat. That's really the appeal of pro wrestling. It always has been, and
right.
I wouldn't necessarily call it a religious experience, but it's very much, you know, it's similar to that, I guess, with, again, with the ritual aspects of it and the, you know, playing out of the forces of good and evil. So
mm-hmm.
in Mexico, it's even more intense. So, but all over the world, that's why it still sticks around, you know, because of those aspects and the folks, folks connect to that. So,
yeah, I mean, recently what got me was The Undertaker finally retired. And me as a kid, The Undertaker was the very top. It was the matches that I remember the most always involved The Undertaker. If it was either him versus Shawn Michaels or him versus Mick Foley, when they had that cage match and him and Mick Foley were going at it, like I'm pretty sure most of it was staged and the other wasn't, but when I was a kid, those matches are the ones that always stuck with me. So it was really tough seeing The Undertaker finally bow out and say, see you later.
Yeah, man, they made him a real legacy. That character or persona really, really stuck in the consciousness of the people, because he came in a time that was really weird. WWE was doing some weird stuff at that time in the early 90s. Like, they started having people with, like, occupations. Like, that was their gimmick. It wasn't that, here's Wildfire Tommy Rich. He's a good wrestler, and he's, kind of charismatic. They would give wrestlers these weird gimmicks. Like, there was a baseball player, and then there was, like, a garbage guy. And then there was, a dentist, and what else was it? Like, IRS, tax, like an accountant. and so a lot of those sank, but some stuck. And that Undertaker gimmick, I think, was one of those.
Yeah.
Where people just kind of, it resonated. Like, ooh, big, spooky zombie guy. He would get knocked down, but then he'd rise up all spooky, do that sit-up.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was the smartest thing for them to do with Calloway. What is his first name? Mark Calloway.
Yeah.
Because he was in NWA there for what? It's so funny because he came over to WWE as this bizarre character when, folks like me that were following wrestling knew him as one of the skyscrapers, mean Mark Callis, and mm-hmm. he'd do the heart punch. And he wasn't much of a talker. He wasn't the greatest talker, but he was tall. He had a look, and he was a tough guy. He was a tough guy. I think he was born in Houston.
He's Texan boy.
Yeah, built from Houston somewhere. But and then he went to WWE, and of course, NWA and WWE were so different. NWA, was still trying to come across as a sport at the time. This was way before internet, and before everybody was like figuring out everything that was going on backstage and the whole theater of it.
Mm-hmm.
And WWE were doing crazy characters, and it was a real contrast where he's a big tough guy in one organization, then comes over as this, spooky, old school Universal Monsters Undertaker. Where, what is he? Is there a force in the urn? And this whole cartoon aspect was funny, but boy, it connected and it got off. And it also helped that he was a great wrestler and apparently a real, real leader behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Universally looked up to by everybody backstage. You did not want to get him upset at you or mad at you, no matter where you were. He had the respect of everybody backstage and became a legend, and became a legend. WWE made him a living legend.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched wrestling in about 17 years, but when I saw that he retired, I had to watch that the clip of him, like, putting his cape, or not his cape, his trench coat off, but putting down his head in the middle of the ring and just walking away. And I said, oh, man, I almost teared up.
It was a moment, man. Yeah. It was definitely a moment. But a beautiful moment over all those almost 20, hell, he'd been wrestling for almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And it was time. Because you can, age catches up with you even for a character like The Undertaker.
So. I know. The weird thing is, how people say there was a moment where I realized I wasn't a kid anymore? That was my moment.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a kid anymore. And that was my moment, watching The Undertaker take away.
Yep.
But, yeah. Good at wrestling. But let's get back into some more horror stuff. So, speaking of horror stuff, I know we all have them, but what are some of your horror reviews? Like, so what are the people that just hated your stuff? Because I got some that are really strange. But what do you got? I'm pretty sure you watch them on Amazon or anywhere. So what do we got?
Yeah, I used to keep up with a lot of those. I don't pay attention to them too much anymore. I was caught up, you know, back when all this was starting, you get excited about it. But I know people don't like some of the sexual parts of my story, although that's, you know, that's part of a lot of my story. you know, I always kind of defend it, saying, hey, we're human. It's going to happen, you know.
Right.
So what's the problem of kind of exploring some of those ideas or situations or whatever? But I know sometimes, and I could see where people are coming from, where they say some of the situations are a little ridiculous, but come on, everybody likes a little bit of that, you know. So I don't mind, you know, writing about those or expressing that. And if folks don't like it, they don't like it. Again, it's not in all my books necessarily, but that's a pretty that's one of the parts of mine that you'll find in, you know, some of my books. Sometimes people don't believe, oh, he couldn't have done that, or, oh, suddenly this guy knows how to fight, or whatever. It's like, well, you know, sometimes people do. I don't let a lot of those bother me, I guess, because, again, I'm writing what I like to write and what I want to write. But I can't think of any real stinkers.
No.
Because there's enough good reviews for me to be like, well, I'm thank you for giving my story a chance. I'm sorry it wasn't for you. You know, that's kind of how I feel when I read those. Like, man, well, sorry. I guess it just wasn't for you. But thanks for giving it a try. You know, so.
Yeah, that's kind of how you have to go about it. Because I've met some authors who fire back, and I'm just like, no, that's not what you got to do. You got to just let it roll off, because it's just going to make it worse for yourself.
Yeah, because it's not going to stop me. You know, right. I'm going to keep writing until I'm done writing, done coming up with ideas. So, and again, it just kind of comes back where it's like, well, you know, I'm not necessarily looking for the biggest, widest audience for my stuff. I'm writing what I write, and the people that enjoy my writing, great. I guess that's where it starts with. I just kind of write the stories I want to see. I want to, you know, read the stories I want to read, and just take it from there and hope that the people that pick them up also enjoy them too. So, and my stories have very, very big horror elements. There's a lot of gore elements. Of course, my website, zombiebloodfights.com, zbfbooks.com, you know, it's kind of the themes. If you're going to have zombie horror, you got to have that gore. You got to have that feast scene, you know, at the very end of the book where, you know, a bunch of zombies are eating people. And you got to have a lot of those. I got a horror aspect to it. And all I know is that a lot of the horror movies I used to watch growing up, you know, did have sexual situations. Sure, that was also a part of those movies. A lot of times, Jason ended up killing those folks. But, mm-hmm. you know, that was always an element in horror. When I think horror, I sometimes, you know, at least 80s horror, I didn't quite get into the torture horror of the 2000s. But you know, that's why some of these, sexual aspects are in some of my books. When I know horror, that stuff kind of goes down sometimes,
right,
between characters and books. So I never saw it as a big deal. But there's going to be great fights. There's going to be blood. There's going to be, you know, all the stuff that I enjoy watching. So I'm going to write about, you know.
Good. You write about what you want.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Write the stories that you want to read, want to see, want to have out there, man. Because there's somebody out there, there's people out there that want to see more of that.
Right.
It's not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't write for everybody. I don't necessarily want everybody to read my books.
Right.
But the people that are into that stuff, that like that can appreciate that stuff and aren't prudes or whatever, pick up one of my books, man. You're going to like them. You're going to like them.
Awesome. So let's say there's somebody out there right now who is trying to write their own book. What kind of advice would you give them?
Well, it's write every day. I mean, that's the simplest. Write every day, whether it's a sentence or, you know, 12 pages, just write something every day. That's the key. You know, getting it done. You know, I have friends with amazing stories, and it's like the stuff that they come up with is great, but either they can't find the time or they just don't, you know, dedicate a little time to putting that idea to paper. I mean, there's folks I talk to, man, that have just amazing ideas and talents, and but just don't get to writing it. I mean, stuff that I think's amazing. You just gotta write. You gotta write. Mm-hmm. And I think, like I was saying earlier, read and write, because when you read, you know, you learn more of how to do the writing better.
Right.
Another step further you can take from the simplest. You know, there's writing classes every day that you can take. You don't necessarily have to get a degree, you know, you could take a writing class at a, you know, community college or somewhere else just to learn maybe not the formalities, but the science of writing, I guess, is the right way to say it. So that way you can write your stories more efficiently and productively, better. Write your stories better, you know? So that's my main thing. Write every day and do some reading, too. Some reading, too, for sure.
Read and write. Same thing as we did in school.
Yeah. That's the foundation, man. That's how I get all these books written. Just write every day.
Yeah, if you're trying to write a book, just start writing. Best advice you can have.
Exactly. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. So
it's simple, but it's hard. Anyway.
Yeah. Do you have any upcoming stuff you want to share?
Well, yeah. My latest release this past Friday was called Elida versus the Mummies of San Uvalde. This is, again, pro wrestling themed. It's very much a tribute inspired by the Lucha Cinema movies of El Santo and Blue Demon and Mil Máscaras from back in the day. It's an adventure where this Mexican luchador, who not only is he a luchador by day, but he's a crime fighter by night, discovers this ancient Aztec death cult who's trying to, who's stealing these ancient relics from a museum. And Elida has to discover with his sidekick, PJ Homeslice, has to... figure out what's going on and discover what's going on and try to foil the plan. So I'm in the middle of editing. Remember how I told you one of my manuscripts is being edited? In fact, he just texted me while we were talking here to get my address. He's in, I think, Washington State right now, my buddy Bo. He wants to mail me the manuscript that he's finished editing. I'm about to get the edits to the sequel to my superhero story, action adventure superhero story, La Lechuza, codename La Lechuza. That's the first book. This one's going to be called La Lechuza versus the Blood Queen. And in this one, Lechuza discovers the border patrol has been infiltrated by vampires, and has to discover what's going on and if these vampires are real and if they are, how she's going to stop, because they're killing these. Illegal immigrants that are coming into the community. So it's an interesting story. But and I'm in the middle of writing a kaiju story called it's a sequel to the other superhero story I have, Room 26 and the Army of Suhudul, which features San Antonio superhero named the Violet Spectre. In this one, there's a kaiju that's being that gets because they're doing fracking here in Texas, and in Carrizo Springs, the fracking unleashes a kaiju onto the little small South Texas city, and the Violet Spectre has the only has to find the keys to help stop the monster. And it's very much a tribute again to the Godzilla stuff, the kaiju stories.
Yeah,
so it's that's what I got coming up. And I got another bunch of ideas of, that are marinating in the pot, so to speak. Like I told you about all the ideas in my head. There's a bunch of stories coming. It's not going to stop for a while. So.
Good. Yeah, that's always good. We need more stories.
What's that?
We need more stories.
There you go. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The world's going to get them from me, whether they like it or not.
Yeah. So let's say somebody wants to find some of your stuff. Well, where can they go?
Amazon.com is where they're all at. Create space. If they got Kindle, they can get most all of my stuff on Kindle. Actually, all of my stuff, I think, is on Kindle. There's even an exclusive Kindle I have of my short stories that I've written that are all compiled. I think it's called 8 Short Stories that I did for various different anthologies. I put them all together in one. It's of course, my website. They can network with me at zbfbooks.com. Which is zombiebloodfights.com, the leader in Tex-Mex exploitation, as I like to call my work. that's where they can find me. And heck, they could, and because it's on Amazon and Create Space, they can go to a local book retailer, and they can ask for it, and they could order it from a bookstore too. So that's out there if they wanted it. If they like to go to those brick and mortars, they can get it for them. They can get it for them.
They sure can. Are you still working through a publisher, or did you go self-publish?
Oh, no, it's all self-published now, man. I just had you know, it was cool to go with the publisher there for a while, but had a couple bad experiences with agents and the you know, publishers, and a lot of stuff went wrong. And it had nothing to do with the stories or whether they were going to publish my stuff or not. It's just kind of the way it was, you know. It's just kind of handled. I was like, you know what, it's a new age, man. I can do all this on my own and just do it all myself, man. Just cut out the middleman and just take care of business myself. It's so much easier that way. So I think I encourage other writers, you know, who, and there are writers out there that want to do the traditional publishing, and that's great. You know, I support them in that. I'm not going to tell, again, it's kind of one of those things, I'm not going to tell an artist that how they're going about something is wrong. It's how they want to, you know, do their own personal expression. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I don't need all that. I don't need the accolades. I don't need whatever. I need just, you know, write my stories, get them out there, and get them in people's hands. And I've had a great year so far, so I'm real excited for everything that's coming and for, you know, getting more people in more books in people's hands. So it's exciting. I'm pretty excited for the direction my you know, little humble stories are going, man.
Good.
Yeah.
So if anybody out there wants to check out some of that stuff, go to Amazon and type in Bowie V. Ibarra and they will all come up. There will be some links in the show notes for you guys. If you guys want to do it the easy way, I will do the work for you. All you got to do is click on it. It'll take you straight to it. And Bowie, thank you so much for coming on, man.
A lot of fun being here, man. Thanks a lot for giving me the opportunity to come on here and say hello and chat with you and say hello to everybody. Thank you so much, all y'all. I hope y'all got through this and had some fun.
Yeah. It was good catching up. Haven't talked to you in probably, I don't know, 2 years.
Yeah, it's been a while, man. Apart from our work that we do for the work that you've done for my books.
Right.
Yeah, we haven't had a chance to catch up or anything, man. So this was nice. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Good.
I appreciate all the readers out there, man. Give my books a chance if you like. I think you'll like them.
Yeah, I second that. So go ahead, check them out. Like I said, all the stuff is going to be in the show notes. So that's going to do it for this episode. If you'd like to send Bowie a email or anything like that, you got a question for him, but you can't find how to get a hold of them, you could always send those to thehalloweenpodcast@gmail.com and I will forward those over for you. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thehalloweenpodcast. We're also on Twitter at thehalloweenpod. And if you like to support the show, you can do it a couple of different ways. Just go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. You can subscribe on iTunes or whatever media you're working for your podcasts. You could also go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/amazingadvertising. And you can give us a monthly donation, help us keep the lights on here, and help me pay for some of Bowie's books because I want to read them and all that good stuff. So, yeah. That's going to be it for us. So have a good night, everybody.
Hey, y'all, take it easy. Bye.